Hi, everyone. This is Haley Colombo, a reporter at Columbus Business First. I'm the guest host of this podcast, Women of Influence. The podcast features conversations with Columbus's leading women in business, in which they talk about how they've gained power, how they keep it, and how other women can follow in their footsteps. Today, we're chatting with Robbie Banks, who recently joined Columbus Partnership as the Program Director for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. What follows is our conversation about Banks' journey in gaining confidence and knowing her value. Thanks for listening. Thank you so much, Robbie, for joining the Women of Influence podcast. We're so happy to have you.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
So I wanted to first start with asking you about your new role. After several years at Leadership Columbus, you transitioned to the Columbus Partnership in April to lead their diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. Can you tell me a little bit about your journey to that?
Sure. I am in a new position. It was created as a result of, you know, the work that was currently underway before I joined the partnership team. But my role as Program Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion really marries passions and interests that I've had with that that work. But my job essentially is to shepherd the work that is being done with our members that are the CEOs of our region's employers who have a strong interest and passion in moving our community towards being anti-racist. It's really exciting to be in this space. Previously, I worked at the Columbus Chamber, and I'm back in the same office, essentially, where the Columbus Chamber was co-located with the partnership in One Columbus team several years ago. So essentially, it's like coming home. Prior to my role at the Columbus Partnership, I was the Program Director of Leadership Columbus, where I managed the programs there and was there for about 2.5 years. I also served as the interim executive director before the current executive director was named. And prior to that, as I mentioned, I was at Experience Columbus. So Experience Columbus, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, I was able to lead the Certified Tourism Ambassador Program, get that started, launched, and helped grow it to be the nation's largest Certified Tourism Ambassador Program in the country, as well as launching a brand new initiative that had never been done before called the Experience Dedicated Destination Program. Everything focused on the visitor experience.
You went to school for marketing, and did you imagine that, you know, you would be kind of in a diversity, equity, and inclusion role now, like kind of when you first started out? Was that always a passion for you, or is that something that developed over time?
It developed over time. It certainly wasn't something on my radar when I was in undergrad and graduate school. So I made sure to, of course, just be a sponge in any room that I was in, starting with, you know, when I worked in Mayor Coleman's office at City Hall, just really had the opportunity to be in the room, learn from others. Then when I was at the Columbus Chamber leading the young professionals component of the Attract and Retain Talent Initiative, that is probably the time when I really was exposed to diversity, equity, inclusion, and how important it was to be at the forefront of our region's priorities. Of course, my focus then was the demographic of young professionals specifically and serving as that clearinghouse for the region. But oftentimes, I did find myself being the only young person, younger person in the room, sometimes the only female. And other times also the only person of color. And I soon recognized how valuable being in that space was and how I needed to embrace that. Not to look at it as a negative, but how do I make sure that I speak up, that I advocate for things that are important to me and my work at the forefront, because oftentimes those were the tables or the rooms I was in was related to work. So they're professional settings. But, you know, I wanted to make sure I was listening more than anything, taking it in, and being ready to add any input, ask questions when appropriate, so that I could make sure that my demographic or my gender or, you know, whatever it may be, had a voice at the table. And I really embraced that.
Was some of this kind of unconscious, you were doing this and kind of without even realizing that you were doing this, or was it, or did you like really notice, you know, oh, I'm the only person of color in this room right now. Like, what is my responsibility? And what, it seems like that would be kind of a lot to take on in some respects. Like, a lot of us are in a room and we're just trying to represent like what our job description is, let alone like, you know, all of these other kind of aspects of identity. What was that like for you? Sorry, that was several questions in one.
Yeah, I would say for me, it was not the primary reason or that I was at the table or in the room. I didn't see that as like, oh, I was invited to this event or this, to be in this meeting because of the color of my skin or my gender. It was because of my job responsibilities and what I represented for on behalf of the Columbus Chamber. However, I certainly felt that it was important for me to highlight those aspects if it wasn't already apparent, again, when appropriate. But I didn't make it an issue. I didn't necessarily need to raise my hand and speak up like, well, this is, you know, Robbie speaking as the only person of color in the room. I never like made that a highlight, if you will. Mm-hmm. And granted, this was in my early 30s that I was in this role. So I'm a lot more confident now in my early 40s than I was back then. I really, really have learned a lot and grown, but I recognize that. And for me, that was important for me to internally recognize my place, but more importantly, be ready to speak up and ask those questions if it were appropriate and timely. Mm-hmm. So yes, it was an exciting time for me to really step into that. It was a brand new position, so I was very fortunate to be in that role. And I absolutely loved it, was in that role for 5 years. But, you know, certainly I'm excited to see the growth that has happened as a result of the young professionals in the region and how everyone has tried to make this region a really attractive, sticky place for that demographic. And I think that's paying dividends.
For you, what are some of your, I guess, main kind of personal goals for the role that you have now at the Columbus Partnership? Like, more so, like, what does, you know, advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion really mean to you in that space? Like, what ideally should change or what ideally should be improved that really matters to you?
I think more than anything, my hope is that for myself to continue learning, to be a continuous learner and educating myself and being more aware. Self-awareness is key, I think, in any leadership position, really any position, period. I think this is an effort focusing on aligning the community behind or around diversity, equity, inclusion is certainly a marathon, not a sprint. This is not something that we're going to do in a few months, a few years. We need to work towards being at the forefront of having this being a sustainable strategy. So that is something that takes a lot of learning, a lot of listening on my end and educating myself, because even though I've been in Columbus my entire life, there are a lot of initiatives and programs and organizations that are doing this work and have been doing this work, but I may not even be aware of them or just only surface level aware of them. So it's more than just educating myself, but we at the partnership are educating our staff internally. And then also the CEOs around the table, our members that are involved in this work through the DEI work groups, are fully invested in the strategy and how do we make sure we move the needle. And that's all things that we are still working to figure out. But for me, I really I look at it as just continuous learning and growing. And the only way that I'm going to be able to help impact change is if I personally look internally at myself and see how that I can influence those around me.
And you mentioned that, you know, a lot has changed kind of personally for you, you know, early 30s compared to early 40s, as far as your own kind of confidence and ability to maybe possibly self-advocate or advocate on behalf of others. What has that confidence journey been like for you? And what have you learned over, you know, the last 10 years, you know, that's put you where you are now?
Wow, that's a big question. I've learned so much, first of all, thanks to the great positions I've been in, and just honestly, just the vast network of people that I have had the privilege to work with and learn from. So anywhere from the signature program participants at Leadership Columbus, which is anywhere from 55 to 65 individuals every single year, I touched three different classes during my time there. That was about 170 people. And certainly looked at that as an opportunity to learn from them because they are leaders themselves and we're helping develop that. We would help them develop their capacity for community leadership development. You know, I also went through the program. I was able to go through the program in my mid-20s when I worked at the City of Columbus. And that really set me on the path to understand, wow, there I can literally make a career out of helping Columbus thrive. And that really exposed me to the work that I currently do. But the confidence came from just honestly, just lots of interactions and conversations, being in the room, having a voice, learning my voice and people looking to me and expecting me to speak up, quite honestly. There was a time where I kind of would sit back and just more or less listen and observe. And again, there's a time and a place for that, especially as someone new to the team. I'm still doing a lot of that. But now I think because of my experience, people look to me to speak up. I don't always need to. But that is certainly the expectation that comes along with being a leader and helping to advance this important work. You know, also facilitation. I never would have guessed that I'd be standing in front of a room facilitating classes and trainings and programs, speaking in front of thousands of people at the Experience Columbus annual meeting. I was terrified of public speaking. If you asked me to do that in college, I would have been terrified. So that was something I had to learn over time. And it only happened because I was kind of thrust to do it. No one asked me, do you want to do this? It was like, okay, we need you to do that. So that's what you're going to do. Because of the roles I was in, right? There was a lot of the roles I've been in have been external facing. So there was no hiding.
Yeah. I mean, that's super interesting that doesn't necessarily like come naturally to you. Cause I would kind of think that it would, but you really just had to, like you said, jump into it and just throw her in the deep end type thing.
Exactly. And I certainly cringed at the fact, you know, when I learned that I needed to start, you know, speaking and being in front of a room, but I got over it really quickly. People were kind. I had to prepare, of course, that certainly helps. And I also had great leaders and supervisors that trusted me, gave me the resources that were needed, and also just really helped boost my confidence. And I've had amazing mentors as well throughout my career, whether they were, you know, defined as mentors or not, I look back and think of all the people that have taken me under their wing, if you will. And that led to certainly boosting my confidence, knowing my value too. That's super important to anyone, not just a woman, but knowing your value, that's something that I'm still honestly working on.
For people who haven't necessarily thought about that as, because I'm sitting here thinking like, I don't know that I've necessarily thought about that as like something that I should think about, but like, how do you go about thinking about that? Does it come from feeling undervalued at a certain point and then having to kind of problem solve that? Or is this something that everyone should, even if they don't feel necessarily undervalued, that everyone should think about for themselves?
Well, you know, I'll be really honest with you. It hit me in the face when I was considering looking for another position because I felt that my pay, my salary, did not justify like the amount of work and value that I brought to the organization. So I had never tried to negotiate salary in my life. I'll just be honest with you. I just would say, okay, that sounds great, and just take it, right? Again, goes back to confidence. Mm-hmm. Granted, you know, I was young, but certainly had I probably spoken up for myself earlier on in my career, I probably would have understood the true value of what I bring to the table then, because, you know, as women, sometimes we just are shy, don't want to speak up for ourselves, or don't feel it's right, might show, you know, that we're too assertive or whatever it may be. But for me, I just always grew up being very modest, grew up very modest upbringing, and did not value, I didn't think that money was like not the driving factor of any of my career decisions. Obviously, I worked in retail for many years before I went to the city of Columbus and completely did a detour. And then I've worked in nonprofits. So clearly that's not been something that's been driving me. But, you know, there was a time where I thought, you know what, I think I should ask for more money based on what I have done, what I've accomplished, what I will continue to do for this great organization. And it's time for me to go ahead and just say it.
Yeah.
So I was able to negotiate a higher salary. I had to wait a little bit for it, but it really gave me a lot of, it really boosted me in terms of, okay, I know my value. Now I need to state what it is. Otherwise, no one will ever give me what I think I deserve as far as a salary. Yeah. If I don't advocate for myself, who else is going to do that? That's no one else's job but my own.
I feel like obviously I could probably quickly research on the internet right now. Like, there's obviously a gender differential about folks, you know, people with likelihood of asking for a raise or negotiating in salary, negotiating salary in a job offer. So was that something you were ever taught? Because I know that I certainly was not. And it took me a couple jobs to even understand that that's something I should be doing. And so So what was your, how did you kind of realize this is something that maybe I'm not doing, and it might have to do a little bit with my gender and what I was kind of socialized to do.
Right. So, you know, because I came from pretty humble beginnings, my family, we never talked about fairness and salaries, and that was never something that I grew up around talking about. You know, it was like, you work hard, you put your time in terms of working hard, earning a paycheck, and that's life. And, you know, you make the most of what you have. And you'd be grateful. So that's why for me, it was uncomfortable to ever talk about money. And I will go back to, you know, one of my first jobs working in retail, where I was in a supervisory role. They made it clear, even before I was a supervisor, they made it very clear, you're not to share your hourly wage with anyone. You could be reprimanded for it. So it was looked, you know, as a bad thing. So you never talked about what you made compared to someone else that worked with you, because of course there was probably a little bit of a divide. Granted, I worked with a lot of females, but that was like a no-no. So I kind of had it in my head I started that job at 19. You're not to talk about pay. You don't need to know what other people are making. It has nothing to do with you, right? That was my mindset. for a long time. And again, because money was never something that, in fairness, wasn't something that I grew up talking about. I don't know. Something just triggered me, I think, when I realized, like, I am making stuff happen, and I'm very proud of the work that I've done, and I've worked really, really hard, been surrounded by amazing people personally and professionally. And I know that I had mentors that said, you know what, this is what you need to do. Like, you need to speak up for yourself. And if you don't ask, it's never going to happen. So that really illuminated some things for me. That gave me the boost that I needed to just go for it. And again, that made a big impact on me in terms of my understanding my value and my worth, at least from a salary standpoint.
It's interesting, like, obviously when you talk about value, that's kind of the main category. I don't know why I was like thinking about it in another fashion, more like soft as opposed to like the money aspect. But I think that money, we don't talk about it enough. And I think it's something I know too, that when I talk with young journalists, I talk about money a lot with them because I want them to know that it's okay to talk about with like a trusted peer, right? You know, like that it's okay to, like, these things that we've been socialized to kind of believe that never discuss your pay with anyone. It's like, well, if you never discuss your pay with anyone, you will never find out if there's an unfairness going on, and right, like, you deserve to have that rectified. So that's, I mean, I don't know what your kind of relationship is. Like, do you serve as a mentor to anyone now? And have you, like, how have you, I guess, taken this knowledge and, you know, kind of filtered it down to the next generation? Or is that something that you've done?
I wouldn't say I have any formal mentor relationships, but I always look to serve as someone informally that can be a sounding board, that can, you know, I'm not going to thrust my wisdom, my knowledge, my opinion on anyone, if they don't ask for it. But, you know, I have worked with, you know, young men and women both that will ask about my experience, ask my opinion about something, and I'm happy to share it. And I consider myself an open book. But again, you got to be professional and diplomatic. But I think that it's incumbent upon me and anyone in a position that can of influence to serve as a mentor. Again, if it's not even a formalized relationship, but I look to anyone that I'm working around that can mentor me, even reverse mentoring, but I also want to be someone that's mentoring others always, not just because someone reports to me, but any colleague. So especially younger people, because I look at people I work around, and while they may be younger, certainly a lot of them are a lot wiser than I think I was at that age. So I don't know. Like, I'm always like, wow, like, I don't think I carried myself that way.
Yeah.
You know, in my early to mid 20s, I don't think I had that much confidence, you know, and I keep bringing that up, but, you know, I think a lot of it comes back to, you know, that level of confidence, knowing your worth. But I certainly, that wasn't something I really kind of focused on until probably the most recent years.
I was able to quickly find some stats. So Robert Half, a global staffing firm based in California, found in 2018 that 68% of men negotiate their salaries, while only 45% of women negotiate their salaries. That is definitely, I knew that there was a gendered kind of differential there, but it's interesting to see that kind of in a statistic. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you think could be done by employers? On the one hand, I think it's obviously important to you know, talk to women about this and encourage them. But is there anything that you think could be done from an employer kind of standpoint on, you know, helping more women think about this for themselves? Or is that not really their role? Does it more so have to come from within? What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's something that's to come from within. Yeah, you have to advocate for yourself, mm-hmm. and you have to be your number one advocate. And yep. certainly there are going to be people that help you along the way, but it's not, in my opinion, it's not your employer's job yeah. to do that.
Yeah.
Again, like that's why it's great to be surrounded by a lot of people with various expertise and knowledge backgrounds, even culturally, because culturally for me, that wasn't something like, as I mentioned, that was discussed. I just grew up knowing, like, you don't ask people how much they paid for whatever, right? That's a no-no.
Yeah.
Salary and such wasn't something that I ever looked to as being important to compare myself. And right. and also, I don't think it's beneficial to compare yourself to others. You just got to look at yourself and say, you know, what is it that I bring? What value do I bring to the organization or the company? What skills do I have? What, you know, am I fully utilizing these skills first and foremost? And then that's where it starts. Mm-hmm. Because you could have tons of experience and skills and expertise, but it may not be the right opportunity for you, or you may not be able to fully utilize those skills to really shine. Therefore, it's probably not the right role for you. So it's just a matter of like really understanding and uncovering that too, to make sure you are fulfilled in your role. Because let's be honest, we spend over a third of our day working.
Right.
At least.
Yeah.
And shouldn't we be happy and fulfilled? I absolutely am a firm believer in that.
So do you have any kind of personal goals for the next part of your career? About anything that you want to do to be more happy and fulfilled, you know, with all kind of aspects of your life?
Well, I certainly feel like I'm doing it. So I'm very fortunate, and I'm not trying to be cheesy here, but that I was very happy that this opportunity came about and just so grateful. And I've been very grateful for all the jobs I've had because it brought me to this job and what an immense opportunity it is. But honestly, I haven't given a lot of thought recently to what's next for me. I think it's because I'm in week 7.
Yeah.
I've jumped into the deep end immediately from day 1. Because I'm such a community-oriented person, I will continue my service on nonprofit boards or committee work. But being mindful of not spreading myself too thin, that's something I also have had to learn to do, is like recognize like truly my capacity and make sure that I can focus on my priorities before I start, you know, giving time and talent and sometimes money to things that I would like to support, but maybe time is more valuable than anything else for certain aspects of my career. So it's that constant push pull feeling. I think it's important for us as leaders to make sure we are giving back to our community. So even if it's just volunteering quarterly, for instance, that was one of my goals that I recently set. I'm going to volunteer for a different organization, you know, an organization that I haven't, you know, served on their board before, invite others to join me doing service projects, just getting more familiar with what's out there in terms of our social service agencies and those needs around us in our community is something that we have to all stack hands for. And that has been one of my personal goals, is just to be more involved. I just, again, have to recognize that I don't have all the time that I want to devote currently to that. So I have to be very selective. I also am a freelance makeup artist.
Oh, yes. I was going to ask you about that. I thought, I saw that on your LinkedIn. That is so cool.
Yes, it's my creative outlet. I've been in the cosmetics industry now 24 years. I really enjoy that. So I mostly have clients on the weekends, mostly brides and bridal parties. But, you know, that is something that also I have to balance because I've always had multiple jobs since I've worked two or three jobs at a time. I'm recognizing that hey, you need some time to revive and relax and enjoy. So I've scaled back quite a bit in the past couple of years with my freelance makeup, but I really enjoy it because it truly is a great way to express my creativity and also that people interaction that I absolutely love since I'm such a people-centric person.
Yeah.
And I get to interact with people in a most wonderful day of their life. So it brings me great joy.
So it sounds like that's not something that really kind of adds stress to you. It's more something that is like a stress reliever of doing that. Is that accurate?
To some extent, yes. unless it's you know, the juggle of scheduling, I guess, you know, making sure that I have time available to accommodate my clients as well as my personal obligations. I'm from a big family that's really close. We're all, my immediate family is all here in Columbus, and actually most of my extended family lives in Columbus. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy spending time with my friends and family. So that becomes stressful sometimes because I'm trying to balance like, oh, I have this client, but yet there's like three other things I need to do today. And I need to start, you know, my Saturday starts at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, why did I do this to myself?
Yeah.
So that's when it becomes stressful just because it's self-induced.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. We all do that. You're like, past me. Why would you do this?
Yes.
So to kind of leave it on maybe like an inspiring note, I guess, is there anything that you feel particularly inspired by right now, whether it's, you know, a person or in the work they're doing or a quote that you saw or anything out there right now that you have gravitated toward that's either bringing you joy, inspiring you, helping you be more, you know, peaceful and grounded?
Honestly, I think remember to focus on my health and well-being. So I recently started going to a new workout facility where it's 20 minutes of spinning, followed by 20 minutes of strength training, followed by 20 minutes of yoga.
Ooh.
Yes. And I love yoga. But you know, just to, when I was trying, especially during the pandemic, to like incorporate working out with working from home, yoga seemed to be like the last, like the back burner thing. Like, oh, I'll get around to doing that. And then I never would.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that's actually bringing me a lot of joy because I want to make sure that I am stronger and have the endurance for the Pelotonia ride this year. Thus the spinning.
Yeah.
And of course, strength training is a big part of that. And then I also just want to be in a good headspace. So it's been a commitment that I've made to myself. I have to prioritize my health and well-being. And it starts with making sure that I go to these workout classes that I pay for.
Yeah.
And typically I like working out with, it's a group, you know, fitness class, but I don't know anyone. That's okay because everything I do doesn't need to be social, I realize.
Yeah.
I'm a very social person.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's actually bringing me a lot of joy and centering me and grounding me right now. I hope I can keep it up for a while, but I'm sure at some point there will be another challenge I want to make. Like, I don't know, like people that are, you know, climbing mountains, you know, as part of their vacation experience.
I know.
That, like, something like that. I would love to work towards like some bigger goal, but right now, the short term is participating in my 10th Pelotonia this year, which I'm so happy will be in person. So yeah. I'm really excited for that.
That's fantastic. I love that what you're doing is keeping you, you know, grounded and finding that kind of moment of peace in your day. So, well, thank you so much, Robbie, for joining. I really appreciate it. This has been awesome.
You're welcome. And thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. We'll see you later.
Okay.